accession number 18507, Reel 4.
John Napper, Reel 4. You were saying you knew Jomo Kenyatta in pre-war London?
Yes, I met him. I lived in Pimlico. I had this studio in a block of studios called Eccleston Studios in Hugh Street. And just around the corner in, can't remember the name of the road now, but there was a grocer's, a very good grocer's. And I used to buy my groceries there, and it was often as not there was a queue. And one night I was in there, and in front of me there was, in fact, Jomo. I didn't realise, I didn't know who it was. And we started talking in the queue, and I realised how interesting he was. So I invited him to come back and have some supper with us, and which he did. And then from that time on, we became very good friends. And I painted his portrait, which is now, I believe, in the National Gallery in Nairobi. And he gave me that spear, and I've got his great book, Facing Mount Kenya, in there, with a fine dedication in it. No, he was a very remarkable man, and I liked him very much. He had a great integrity about him, I always thought. And also a tremendous sense of humour.
And he had, obviously, a number of connections in the African community the UK.
Yes, oh yes. He had his... I can't remember their names. No, I can't remember their names. They were people that he out there that he was particularly in contact with. And no, I can't remember. I'm convinced that he was not actually connected with the bad side of Mau Mau, because he always used to say to me that he actually had an affection for the British. But the ones that he really couldn't stand were the Indian moneylenders. Because the Indian moneylenders in East Africa, they used to get these poor Africans into their debt and then screw them as hard as they could. And the number of suicides caused by that. And Jomo found this desperately unfair and wrong. But he wasn't, actually. He said, I'm not against the British Raj at all. In fact, he said, I admire it. This is what he used to say to me in 1937, 36. I think I first met him in 36. Could have been 37. But, no, and then he used to bring some of his friends. He used to bring Paul Robeson to visit us on occasions. And
that's the American singer.
The great American singer, yes. It was awfully nice too, tremendously nice. But those were all in those great days of innocence.
When did he return to Africa?
When I went after the war, Jomo went down to a place called West Chiltington in Sussex, where he worked for a man called Armstrong, I think. Who had a fruit farm, and Jomo worked on this fruit farm during the war. And I think he left. I tried to get in touch with him when I came back from the war in 45, by which I was told that he had just left to go back to East Africa. So I know actually from the time I last saw him, which must have been, I suppose, 1930, 1939 probably, yes, 1939. Don't think I saw him. I may have just seen him at the very, in January of 40, but I don't think so. I think it was 39. From then on, I never saw him again. And we never corresponded, which was a pity.
Did you continue to work while you were in East Africa?
As a naval officer, I mean, you did drawings, I did some drawings. I did a portrait of the wife of the district commissioner, who I became very friendly with and liked very much, the family. Nice family. Charles Norman. And I did drawings of, one, two other white people around. It was the Admiral Shelley, who was my admiral, my flag officer. He built a big canteen for the fleet, and he asked me if I'd do a mural decoration in this fleet canteen. And there was a huge great wall up above doors, and then another one on a wall here. Still, I mean, the small one was about the size of that wall. The long one was 1.5 times the length of the room.
So what would that be?
And about 6 foot, no more than that, about 8 foot high.
So about 8 foot high by about 18 feet long?
That sort of thing. It was a big one. And I had two assistants, a very nice chap, whose name I forget, and a very... Not very clever and intelligent girl, who telephoned me just early on, Patricia Dunlop. She was Patricia McNess in those days. And these two used to do all the donkey work for the preparation of this mural decoration. And then it was to be opened one night, one day. And we were just finishing it off the day before. And we were working on it quite late at night, up on the scaffolding. And I had a pot of black paint that I was putting one, two accents in. And I stepped back and fell off the scaffolding onto the tiled floor beneath. And as I fell down, I half killed myself falling down. I didn't do myself any damage, but... It hurt, and a great shock. But the pot of paint that I was holding came down, and bang, as it banged the floor, it sent up a great jet of black paint right over the mural. And so the rest of the night was spent washing that off and restoring, retouching up the place that had got damaged. And by 9 o'clock in the morning, you couldn't tell anything had happened.
What was the subject of the mural?
Well, it was called, I think, the big one was called Symphony Fantastic, I think. And the other one was a sort of fairground scene. I got some photographs of them somewhere. But they were very decorative and amusing. They were really quite amusing, actually, and romantic and decorative. But I never know what happened to them after that. I don't know what happened when independence came. I don't know what happened. And I heard about 6 months ago, I heard from one of my companions in the army that the mural decoration that I did in St. Thomas's Hospital, which went back to the school afterwards, it was preserved until the atmosphere got it.
Would that be the humidity?
Yes, humidity and the salt from the sea, probably. And anyway, it's now no longer. And I doubt if the East African ones will be any longer. I don't know. The East African ones were painted on a more substantial base, because the wall I painted, the one in Ceylon, that was not a very solid wall anyway. But I think they've all gone to join the majority.
What was the subject of the one at St. Thomas's Hospital in Ceylon?
Oh, fantasy again. Absolute fantasy. Castles and...
What was the purpose of them?
It was just to cheer the... It was in a ward. And rather than this great blank, huge blank wall, with all these poor sick inmates around. They thought that it would cheer people up, and I believe it did, because the command psychologist, who was quite a nice chap, I met him sometime after I painted it, and he said it's quite remarkable that the inmates of that ward seem to get better quicker and keep their spirits up higher than the ones in the other wards. They love looking at your mural, which was very nice. I mean, that's what the painting's really for. That's the whole trouble. I mean, you can't get a great deal of inspiration by a calf cut in half and put in formaldehyde. But the painting can have a psychological effect on one. It can. Yes, well, where did we get to?
You were in East Africa. And how did your service end in East Africa?
It came to an end, and I was told one day that the happiest times in East Africa in many ways were when there was a very old submarine in the harbour called the Osiris, and it had been built in 1906. And it was, in a way, it's on its last legs. But its captain, Maurice Atkinson, who'd been merchant captain before the war of MacAndrew's line, and he and I became very good friends. And Maurice was a most remarkable man. And he'd been in the Spanish Civil War, and he'd been captain of the best boats of the MacAndrew's line before the war, although he was in point of fact in his late 20s. Anyway, he was commander, he was in the, before I met him, he'd been on the Arctic runs on the submarine, famous submarine called the Truculent. He was second in command of the Truculent. And then he was made commander of the Osiris. And he used to take me out with when the Osiris would go out on patrol into the Indian Ocean. And if I happened to be able to get leave, which I always could, I was very spoilt. I used to go out 2 or 3 days on the Osiris. And he always said, you know, we take our life in our hands when we go out on this. But it was lovely. It was marvellous. I did a lot of drawings on it and became very friendly with Maurice. We were good friends right up until he died about 20 years ago, I suppose now. Yes, 20 years ago. Tremendously romantic character. When he left the Navy to go back into civilian life, he went back to the MacAndrews and had a brilliant career there. But he got awfully homesick for East Africa, and they appointed him harbour master at Zanzibar. He went out as harbour master at Zanzibar, and then he was put in charge of a fishing fleet on the Great Lake there. Lake, what's the biggest lake out there? Nyanza? Could be. Anyway, he then got terribly ill and died with some tropical disease. Pity. He was a very, I've known one or two people in my life that I've really admired and been fond of and respected beyond all measure, and Maurice was certainly one of them.
And these patrols, they were out into the Indian Ocean?
Yes, out into the Indian Ocean, yes. I mean, no sign of enemy. But
would this be in 1944, 45?
The latter part of 44 and the beginning of 45. I left Ceylon on August the 4th. 1944, and went over to East Africa, and then I left East Africa I was posted back to Britain in, it must have been about, end of May, no, end of March, I think, 45. I was posted back to the, actually, when I got back, I came back on a Polish ship called the Batory, which was quite an adventure. They were a very nice crew, extremely nice. And there was a wonderful mural decoration painted by a Polish artist in the children's room on board, which was one of the most beautiful paintings I've ever seen. Alas, it was destroyed by fire and when the Bathory was burnt. But anyway, it was quite fun coming back on that. We didn't have any... Well, yes, there was... when we got to Port Said, we had a night, two nights, I think, at Port Said. And I used to go ashore. And one of my companions, the... can't remember his name. He'd been quite a famous boxer before the war. He was very young, but he'd been... I remember his posters up all over London before the war. But I can't remember his name now. He was liaison officer between British Navy and the Polish crew of the Bathory. And he said to me, well, I'm going ashore, I'm going to go, we're going to call in at Tunis, and I'm going to buy Tunisian francs, because there's a, we'll make quite a killing if we do that. So he went and bought a whole big bundle of these Tunisian francs. I bought, I think, £20 worth of them, or something like that, and much more timid than he was. And so then we set off from Port Said, and we arrived within a few leagues of the port of Tunis to be told that there was a German submarine waiting in the roads outside Tunis port. And so we never put into Tunis, we went on. And we didn't put into anywhere until we got to Gourock in Scotland, where Tunisian francs weren't widely sought after. I just lost my 25, I still got them, actually. But poor, I wish I could remember his name, because he was a very nice chap. I can't remember his name.
What were you posted back as, a confidential book officer, or...?
No, that came to an end. I was just posted back as a naval officer. When I got back, I went to my parents' house in Scotland. And then I got a posting. I had a couple of weeks leave, and then I had a posting to go down to the combined operations in Whitehall. And I was there. I was supposed to be a sort of liaison officer between the administration and Churchill. And I had to... he'd ring up and want sort of press you of this, that or the other, and then I had to do it. It was all deeply involved with the Official Secrets Act, so I can't say much about it. And that lasted until I got ill. I got ill, and everybody thought I had TB, and I was sent into a hospital in Chatham, where I was again very spoilt by all the staff, and they took all sorts of tests. I didn't have TB. It was just, I think, sort of nervous exhaustion from the war in general.
Was that an effect of your service? Was that an effect of your service?
I don't know what it was. I never knew what it was. I never knew what was the trouble with me. It may have been something that I caught in the tropics. But anyway, I was in hospital for about 10 days and then discharged back to London, but by which time somebody else had had to take over the job I'd been doing. Then I was posted to the Admiralty, and I was in the Admiralty until I was demobbed in 1945. I was demobbed I think August 45, August or September, might have been September.
Where were you demobbed?
Portsmouth. What's the name of it? I can't remember the name of the station, but it was at Portsmouth anyway. And I just went down there and got demobbed, and that was that. And then I was commissioned to do a mural decoration in the Treasury Solicitor's Office in Storrs Gate, which I did. And I don't know what's happened to that either. It may still be there, but I doubt it. And then Pauline came back from Ceylon, and we were married on November the 20th, 1945, in that lovely church in Battersea, St. Mary's Battersea, which is right on the river. And we lived for a year in London and got fed up with it, and then we went to live in Sussex. And we had an old mill, which we lived in. Very beautiful. They lived there 7 years. But that is all after the war. We don't want to know that.
I mean, how did the war affect you?
It made me grow up in many ways. And I think, basically, it was all positive and good. Because before the war, I was so desperately sort of dreamy and goofy. And I didn't know how many beans made fine. But the war did change that. But what it did have a bad effect, I think, was that I had this motor bicycle. And the dark, crazy things I used to do on this motor bicycle, all of which actually, I don't think, helped my nervous system. Because my nervous system, from having been, as I say, totally sort of relaxed and dopey, by the end of the war, it was pretty sharp. And I was over-nervous. And it took some years after the war to get into a sort of, some sort of balance.
Did it inspire you, your work, your experiences?
Oh, yes, I think it did very much. Yes, I think it did. It freed me to a great extent. The whole of my life, actually, you see, having started painting so young, apart from my father's influence, which was a very good influence always, the rest of the influences that I had when I was at the Dudley School of Art was also quite good. But the Royal Academy schools and my time with Gerald Kelly was too academic. It was too old academic, dead academic. I mean, the academic is wonderful, but if it becomes just a sort of, dead image from the last century, nothing to do with the past, nothing to do with the old masters, but just sort of a dead Victorian, Edwardian attitude towards painting. And I had that to such an extent that the whole of my life, right up to, up to about 20 years ago, really, was an attempt to get rid of that. And the war certainly helped in that very much. I mean, the work I did as war artist was sometimes very wild, but it was quite good. But I got away to a great extent from the academic, and it was a pity that so much got destroyed. Because I'd like to see some of it now. There are one or two, I think, big paintings knocking about. There was one very big painting I did of some Singley's Coast Gunners, which was a canvas about, I suppose, probably about 6 foot by 6 foot by 4 foot. I think that may be somewhere in Ceylon, but I'm not sure. And then I did another big painting of two East African soldiers playing chess, or draughts. Draughts, I think, draughts. And that may have gone over to East Africa, but I don't know. I don't know what happened to any of it, really. I've just heard rough little things said at the time of the distribution, after the exhibition in Colombo. But I'd like to know what's happened to them. I don't quite know how to find out. Who does one write to?
Yeah.